From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. It's 1996, and Keith Kroc is the CEO and one of seven founders of a brand new company called Ariba. And a week into their existence, they're going to have this offsite and dive into exactly what their product will look like. So Keith goes to his chief technology officer, this world-class engineer who had worked under Steve Jobs, and he says, "Build us a prototype." And the CTO says, "No."
He goes, "I'm not going to do a prototype until we go out and we talk to customers." I'm like, "How many?" He goes, "You know, 60, 70. And I said, "What questions should we ask him?" He goes, "You figure that out. You're the CEO."
This company, Ariba, had planned to do something that may seem obvious today, but was pretty radical in the 90s. It wanted to digitize the procurement process. Back then, procurement was done on paper, it was super labor-intensive, and Ariba wanted to move this whole thing onto the internet. But it had no product, and it had no customers. It had no way to convince people that it was the solution to their problems, and now it wasn't even going to have a prototype. And entrepreneurs find themselves in situations like this all the time. We are always, in some way, at some point, starting from absolute zero. You have a great idea, but pretty much nothing to show for it and no idea how you're ever going to start telling people about it. How do you start? How do you find those first customers? How do you get off the ground? Keith is a pretty good guy to ask these questions to because he's done it multiple times to great effect. Ariba may not be a household name, but it's an enormous business. In 2012, the German software maker SAP bought it for $4.3 billion with a B. He's worked with many enormous companies and served on many boards and is now the chairman of DocuSign, where he was also CEO from 2011 to 2017. But what happened at Ariba, when that CTO told Keith to go out and interview customers, forever changed the way Keith approached building businesses. And so today, that's the story we're going to hear. How do you start from scratch? Well, you do it the Keith Kroc way. And we're going to tell you what that is right after the break. Want to hear more great stories from entrepreneurs, founders, and creative thinkers? Check out the Proposify Biz Chat, a podcast hosted by Kyle Racky. He's the co-founder and CEO of Proposify, a really useful business proposal software platform that helps you close more deals faster. Each week on the Proposify Biz Chat, Kyle interviews other business adventurers about really practical things like how they handle sales, marketing, growth, operations, entrepreneurship, innovation, and technology. I just listened to an episode about product demos, and I loved the point that they make about how you can't just be an answer taker. You can't just wait for clients to ask you questions. You have to know their needs in advance and take control of that demo. It's great advice. For more like it, listen to Proposify Biz Chat now at proposify.com/podcast or subscribe on iTunes. All right, we're back. So this episode is actually going to be different from the usual episode of Problem Solvers in that, I tell a story from start to finish and you hear the entrepreneur along the way. But Keith and I spoke on stage at Entrepreneur Live, which is a big event that we had in Los Angeles in November. The idea was to do something of a kind of live version of Problem Solvers. We even had the podcast logo projected really big behind us, which was pretty cool. And I asked Keith to tell me how he solved the problem of finding Ariba's first customers. So now I'm going to play you our conversation. And at the end of it, I will play a few quick anecdotes from two other people who joined us up on stage afterwards. But first, here is me and Keith in Los Angeles.
You know, the first customer, before he's a customer, goes, "Tell me about your other customers." And that's when you got to look at him right in the eye and say, "That's the good news. You're going to be our first. We're going to take care of you." But I think there's a lot of principles, strategies, and tactics on that. But I think the number one principle is people support what they help create. So, for example, when we were starting Ariba, and we had a great founding team, seven people. Our chief technology officer was VP of engineering at Next. He worked for Steve Jobs there. And I said, "Hey, we have an offsite coming. Do a prototype. We're 1 week old." He goes, I'm not going to do a prototype until we go out and we talk to customers. I'm like, how many? He goes, you know, 60, 70. And I said, what questions should we ask him? He goes, you figure that out. You're the CEO. And so we asked him two questions. The first thing was, how are you doing it now? We come in like a doctor, you know, with writing down, oh, it's a long paper-based process. It takes forever. This was the procurement process. And at the end, it's a mess. Now, what would be ideal? Oh, it would have a walk-up user interface. You could parametrically change the business rules. It'd be integrated with the financials. Might use this new thing called the internet and hook up with suppliers. By the way, what are you guys doing? That's exactly what we're doing. And from talking to those 60 customers, we really could see what those specifications were. So we took it one step further, and a few weeks later brought 12 of them together, and we had them present in front of our entire company at that point. It was 10 people, their ideal solution. Then we asked them to combine it, and basically that was the early specification for Ariba that now has $1.3 trillion of annual commerce going through the Ariba network on an annual basis, more than Amazon, eBay, and Alibaba combined. And
so they present this idea.
Yeah.
You got 12 people. They're presenting an idea. Now you want to turn those into your first 12 customers, but also
right.
your first 12 evangelists.
Right.
So how do you do that?
Well, they did it. I'd say about half of that original group, probably all of them ultimately turned out to be customers. Half of them, we hired them.
You hired them?
We hired them. And then we would do the advisory board.
You hired them onto an advisory board.
No, we.
You hired them as staff.
Ultimately, down the road, because then we would repeat that advisory board process every quarter, and it went from 12 people, 25, 50, 100, 200, 400, 800, 1600, 3000. Next thing you know, we're down in Miami. You know, 10,000 people. Then you got to call it a user conference, and so. One of the key things, and maybe this is a counterintuitive thing, is how do you get them to move, right? Because still the product hadn't been finished. And we created a scarcity function. So we said, we have a corporate account program. We're going to pick our first, you know, three customers who say, we want to be in it. We're going to work with you. We're going to tailor your needs. We're going to give you a discount. You're going to do, you know, video, PR, all that stuff. And about 10 of them jumped in and said, and actually we took them all as customers. So, I think that's a key part of it. And work with them really close because you want to make sure that those initial customers are going to be great evangelists, great spokespeople.
How did you scale out that advisory? Were you at this point approaching people who were, they weren't with you from the ground up, right? These were people who now were finding you as an active company.
Yep.
Who were you selecting to go and say, hey, thanks for being a customer. We'd love to have you on an advisory
yeah.
board as well.
Well, what we were looking for was industry thought leaders. They didn't have to be a customer. It was a great place to bring the prospects. The way we got many of those, and by the way, most of the early ones were our friends, long trusted relationships, because it really starts with that. But then they have friends and trusted relationships. So now we would get advisory board members recruiting advisory board members, and it kept growing from that. And I think people they loved that concept because they knew that this was going to be something one of these days. We were the first internet enterprise. We were the first enterprise application written on the internet, and people loved to skate where that puck is going to be, and they could see the momentum. And I think so much in terms of entrepreneurship and building companies and being the leader and being the category king. The leader is not defined by size, but it's defined by momentum.
So this is something that this is a model that you have used not just at Ariba, but elsewhere, right. The idea of bringing your customer, and even, I didn't realize that, even yep. not your customer,
yep.
in to engage with you. Right. How have you applied this outside of Ariba?
So, for example, at DocuSign, we have advisory councils that are by different vertical industries, because we have, on the DocuSign Global Trust Network now, we have 300,000 companies that have standardized on DocuSign, from Fortune 1 to Ma and Pa. We have 200 million unique users, or we're putting 2 million unique users on a week. And so we have verticalized those advisory councils. But then we have a level above that, and that's what we affectionately call our advisory board. The first folks we put on that were our friends, some of them from the Ariba days. And, you know, people like the former CEO of General Motors, McDonald's, Adobe, General Stanley McChrystal.
And what are you getting from these folks? What do they do for you that they are on the advisory panel?
Yeah, so we just had a meeting 2 days ago. We had 70 of them at our headquarters in Seattle. Three things. One, we get their wisdom, their pattern recognition, their scars, strategies. And this is a cross-section of government, industry leaders, global leaders. We have the technology advisor for Prime Minister Abe in Japan. So we get their wisdom. So we throw out problems to them. The second thing is we get the network effect. Because when you're building a network at the foundation, you know, we say, okay, the DocuSign Global Trust Network, that's built on our platform, and that's built on a trust foundation, and that's built on people. And these guys were, you know, they're the basis of that. So they bring their networks. They talk to their friends. I would say, you know, 50% of the big enterprise deals we close are with help in some way, shape, or form with the advisory board. And now the third dimension is these guys get a great network. They're making friends. They're doing business, because it has to be a 60-60 deal. Otherwise, it's kind of a fragile partnership. And so we brought in Liz Wiseman 2 days ago, who wrote the book, The Multipliers. We all went through an experiential exercise. And that's a fun thing to do with, you know, leaders from every country run, you know, global 10 companies and all that.
It's an interesting theory in that I don't know that every entrepreneur would think, oh, all these people want to be a part of my company.
Right.
You know, that if I fling the doors open, right. they're all just going to want to come in and help
right.
me. It seems almost utopian.
Well, you know what's interesting is, and you know, for people who haven't seen this before, the best advice I can give, people go where they're asked. And by the way, what's the worst thing? If you ask them and they say no, you flatter them. And maybe they'll come later. And so I think that's rule number one. When we were doing the advisory council, we said, we're going to do a big bang, all these verticals, 300 people. And I remember our VP of industry marketing goes, what happens if only two guys show up? I go, only two will know. So I think don't be afraid to ask. It sure can't hurt.
Final question on it. How big is the advisory panel now at DocuSign?
The advisory board's now, I think, about 140, 150 people, and it's an amazing group,
and you'll keep adding to it.
What's that?
And you'll keep adding to it.
By the way, we will keep adding to it. We will, and everybody's, you know, value, and everybody does it in some way, shape, or form. So now we go around the world. We just had one in Tokyo, one in Paris. So. Yeah, it's a simple strategy, mm-hmm. and I think one that every entrepreneur can deploy. And start with your friends and build the trusted relationships.
Yeah. Keith, that was really awesome.
So after that, we brought two more people up on stage to join the conversation. We had Cindy Whitehead, the founder and CEO of The Pink Ceiling, and also Brian Liu, the chairman and co-founder of LegalZoom, and also the CEO of a new startup called Right Counsel. And the conversation that we were going to have now was really about growth, because Keith had set up really nicely how to start the company, and now we were going to talk to three great entrepreneurs about how to keep that company growing. And a lot of the conversation ended up focusing on hiring and motivating your team and moving everybody forward. And I just want to go back into the conversation here. So now you're going to hear Keith first talking about something that happened to him at Ariba, and then Cindy and so Brian chiming in afterwards.
As a CEO, if you're going to innovate at scale, then you have to be good at upgrading people and, you know, taking them around. You know, I always look around the executive staff. Okay, well, maybe we need to hire one here. And I would, no matter what, I'd always be recruiting one executive a quarter. Now, the thing is, the magic is if you can make that noble. So in this playbook, Team Rule 5, hire the best people, especially if they're better than us. And can I just tell maybe a little story? The real quick story, sorry about that, is now we have about 60 people in Ariba, and one of the founders, the VP of marketing, and we'd go around, round table, you can say anything, and he stood up and he goes, well, this is going to be bigger than I ever thought of. This company is going to be way more successful. Speaking of Team Rule Number 5, hire the best people, especially if they're better than us, I think I should move aside, and we should bring in a world-class VP of marketing. And you can kind of see the jaws drop. And there is a young developer right next to him, 25 years old. I'll never forget, Benny Haskett, and he goes, Bobby, I just came from a company that's going to go bankrupt any day, and if one person had the courage to say what you just said, we could have taken this thing to the moon. And from that day, it became noble. And by the way, that was a story I repeated constantly, and then there were other ones.
I'm wondering, one question, Keith. So what if you've got this situation where there's somebody who you think, you know, maybe should step aside, and you want to keep them there because they've got other roles that they can play? I mean, what would you do in that situation?
By the way, that was exactly the case with Bobby Lent. We had him move to be in charge of business development and go after Accenture as our as our partner. That I think that's the key thing. So in other words, if you have to fire somebody, let them go. First of all, it shouldn't be a surprise. We always say, you know, it's fix, move, and after that, only move on. And by the way, that's the key to growing the business because, you know, these guys might be great in a different area. And by the way, putting somebody on top of another one, too, if these guys really believe in the mission. And that's what I meant where it's kind of the secret sauce. Yeah. And, of course, if you can get them to do it on their own free will, that's great. But also, you know, it's and so much of a part of being an entrepreneur is make sure the right person is in the right slot. And by definition of companies going like that, it's going to change. Mm-hmm. And so to create the culture of the only constant is going to be change, I think.
To your point, though, on stories being so essential as you grow to keeping that foundational culture that made you great sort of in the first place, I think that it is so important that those that started with you, you find the way for them to stay with you because they're part of it. Yeah, they're the history, they're the stories. Yeah. They were there on the day when there were three desks. And I remember when Keith told the story about you do everything. Like, I can really remember sitting at my desk and being on the phone and somebody calling in and saying, can I speak to your legal department? Brian will cringe. And I said, one second. Hello? Because that was it, right? So I think that but if you've done it right at the beginning and you've gotten people who I think you can figure out that line of questioning and how you go through interviews to find true builders, people who delight in building things, they will actually know when I'm not the person to build this step, but I can go help it build in this way.
Right.
And so I think you can keep those people with you through the long haul and bring in people who maybe are more, what do we say, classically trained in a particular area, but respect the folklore and those builders who've gotten it to today.
Yeah. And let me ask
the conversation went on for a while after that, and if you want to hear and see, in fact, all of it, you can go to entrepreneur.com. We have a video of the entire thing, but I think the takeaway here from start to finish is that growth, starting from the beginning and keeping it going, is really about getting people on your team, making sure that they feel connected to you, whether they're the customers, the first customers, or the second, or the millionth, or the staff that you're building. Everybody's got to move together. And that's our episode. But wait, before you go, please hear me out on a few ways you can stay in touch with the show and contact me directly. First of all, if you like the show, it would be amazing if you subscribe to it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Problem Solvers. That way, you'll never miss an episode. We come out every Monday morning. Also, I love hearing from listeners. You can go to jasonfeifer.com. That's J-A-S-O-N-F as in Frank, E-I, F as in Frank, E-R.com, where you'll find my email address, social media handles, and also you can sign up for my monthly newsletter, The Feifer 5, which is 5 monthly insights and bursts of inspiration for entrepreneurs. It's basically a collection of the ideas that excited me the most that month. So please go check it out. And that's again, jasonfeifer.com. And if you want to drop me a line directly, please let me know about the problems you've solved, and I might have you read the letter in a future episode of the show. We can all learn from each other, and that also means you. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media, and this episode was edited by Conrad Martin. We are also online at entrepreneur.com. Again, I'm Jason Feifer. Thanks for listening, and now go solve some problems.